Hey, what's up, everyone? It's Richie, obviously, Dirt. Maybe that's my new tagline for my podcast is, hey, everyone, it's Richie Dirt. Dirt, everyone knows who it is, Richie. Okay, so today on this segment, I am talking about my DJ story. I gave my basic overview of what I want to do on this podcast, which was about 5 minutes long. Then the next segment I did was my dance story because I've never been a professional dancer. I've never been paid to perform to dance, but I've always danced and I've always taught dance. So I don't really even call myself a dancer, but it gives a lot of context into who I am and what I've been about, and it leads directly to the DJing thing, which is another huge part of who I am and what I'm about. And if you've known me for more than 5 minutes, you'll figure out or know already know. If you've known me for 25 years or whatever, you know that I'm a DJ. Anyway, my DJ story goes like this. There's three main stages. The three main stages are like 1988, then like 1991, then 1994. So I'll start at the beginning. I didn't really get the whole DJing thing. I kind of figured that these people played music at discos, school discos, and I'd seen a couple of movies with scratching on it, but it wasn't really like a thing. So, but my first introduction, the first date is 1988, and the reason why that stands out for me as far as telling my DJ story is that in 1988, I used to get a little boombox that my dad had given me and my brother, and I used to record voice breaks onto cassette tape and then record songs, like my favorite songs, off the radio. So, for example, I'd say, "Hey, welcome to blah 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 FM. It's Richie. That was a song by the Beach Boys. Coming up next is the new song by Paula Abdul," and then I'd wait there for that song to come on, and I'd try and record it, and I'd ring the radio station and request it so they'd play it and ask them to tell me when they'd play it so I could be ready, and then I'd record that song. Then I'd stop, then I'd record another voice break, so on and so forth. So it was just kind of experimenting, partly with the fact that this boombox could record us, because we had other stereos, but they were old school, so they just were like turntables and cassettes. There was no way to record into them, we don't think. And anyway, we figured it out, and I remember just hearing my voice for the first time and thinking, "Oh, that sounds crazy. Is that how I sound? Is that how I sound?" And figuring out, "Oh shit, that's how I sound." And then and from there, nothing really happened until around 1990 when I started dancing, which I've told my dance story. Go check it out. But around that time, I was still playing with my mum had bought a 3-in-1, like stereo system that had a CD player in it. So first of all, introduced to CDs, which was dope. But also it had a tape deck in it, so it could also record cassettes and cassette to cassette double tapes. It also had a turntable on it, and you could plug the VCR in it and play movies. And you could record onto cassette soundtracks from movies and stuff off TV, because you could record out of the VHS and into the stereo system. So you could also record stuff that you recorded. Like, you could tape shows off TV onto VHS and then record those samples or songs off a TV show, like Radio with Pictures or RTR, Ready to Roll. You'd record songs off there and dub them over to cassette, and the quality would be terrible. Anyway, so this is around 1990, and I'm getting into dance, and I start just putting these little tapes together of mixes of songs that I'd like to dance to, and then little like scratch breaks from one song, an intro from another song, and then I'd take these tapes to like parties and play them and dance, because I just didn't want to go to the party and have to wait for like a really good song to play in order to dance. I just want to get there, dance, show off, be the man, and just like, you know, just wanted to be this kind of, I guess, the star or the center of attention, or just that was just such a big thing. It was just like what you did back then. So we used to do that. All my friends used to do it. It wasn't like I was a crazy freak. Everyone used to do it. All the boys used to do it, and some girl groups. Anyway, so I'd started getting into chopping up like just bits and pieces from all over onto this cassette tape. And then the next date, so that's like 1988, 1990, sorry, so 1991, I'm still dancing. I'm at high school, and one lunchtime, this DJ comes to school, and it's a bunch of people. They brought a DJ to our school to promote an all-ages nightclub in Christchurch called Club Leander. And it was if you know, kind of Avonside, Dellington area, it was at the Porritt Park Club Rooms, just in the kind of around the kind of Avon Loop area. And it was an all-ages gig, and they were advertising it at around certain schools, and our school was one of them. So they gave a free lunchtime disco, and we were like, oh, lunchtime disco. I'm a dancer, so I'm like, yeah, any chance to go and like just hear loud music and dance. And we went to the school lunchtime disco. We were kind of thought we were cool because we were already like nightclubbing in that. So when these people turned up, we were kind of like, it'll be cool to have something for all ages, but we're still going to drink beforehand and stuff. But we would anyway. So they this they we went to this lunchtime disco, and they had a DJ there, and this dude looked like this DJ. His name was DJ Kling. Big shout out to DJ Kling, my first ever DJ mentor. But he was DJing, and he was behind the turntables, and he was playing a song, and I was just like, oh yeah. And I looked at him, and I was like, man, this guy looks like from D-Light or something, like Groovers in the Heart. Like he just looked like a hippie. Like hippies made a huge comeback in the 1990s. So if you don't know, if you're really young, hippies are from the 70s, but in the 1990s, that whole look became like huge with white boys. Kind of like long, greasy hair, flares, flower top. You know, this guy was DJing, and then he played one song, and I was like, oh yeah, I like the song. He played another song, but he mixed the two songs perfectly, and I was just like, what the fuck was that? Sorry for swearing, but I was like, oh, what is that? And he's like, that's what those DJs do. They mix the songs perfectly, because in my head it clicked all straight away, because I've been trying to do stuff at home for so long on cassette tapes. And I seen this guy just doing this beat mixing, and he played the next song, and the next song mixed into that song, and all of these songs I liked, and they all mixed in perfectly. Just every 8 bars out in the intro and outro it was amazing to me. And straight away I was like, I'm gonna be a DJ. If that guy dressed like a hippie can do it, I can do it. And so straight away I went to Club Leander that Friday night, because it was every Friday night I went there. And I, on a side story, as I was walking up, on a side story, the person at the front door taking the money was Oscar Kightley, who's a famous Samoan actor, comedian, and actor in, you know, Auckland, New Zealand, Christchurch. And he was just on the door taking the money. And I was like, oh my God, that's a guy from the. He was on a TV show back then called Life. And I was just like, oh my God, it's Oscar Kightley. Because he was fucking one of the coolest people on TV. I didn't even figure out that he was living there making TV in Christchurch back in those days. I didn't even really know, like, I knew they made What Now, but I didn't know they made everything, like children's television back then. Anyway, so he was there on a side story. So I went up the stairs, and I walked straight up to DJ Kling, and I said, dude, you got to teach me how to DJ. And straight away he was like, yep, well, this is the gear. And he just literally started teaching me while straight away, as soon as I asked, he started teaching me and showing everything. This is how you cue the headphones. This is how you turn the sound off. This is how you this is hit the this side channel. This is the crossfader. This is how you plug it all in. This is where the speakers go. Like, he literally showed me everything every week. I would go every week, and he would just show me, show me, show me. And and I was hooked. I was like, yeah, I'm gonna be a DJ. And so I would go there every week, and there was another dude there who was a rapper called Hamish Clark. And I had seen him around at a couple of dance parties where we would enter competitions, and a couple of months after I learned how to DJ, I'd seen him around, and then I saw him at this dance competition, and he walked up to the turntables, and Soul Master C, who's a crazy famous, he's like the godfather of Christchurch DJing. Soul Master C was DJing, best mixer. He taught Greg Churchill, who taught Kling, who's the dude who I saw. But Soul Master C was playing, and he was just DJing, and it was so his mixing was just so perfect and so good, and he had music no one else had. Anyway, Hamish walked up and he started. He asked for a quick mix. I was like, oh, okay. What's this gigantically tall? This dude's like 6'8", white dude, dressed like Big Daddy Kane. What's he gonna do on the turntables? Because I hadn't really seen him go on the turntables, and he started scratching, and I was just like, holy shit! Because I'd seen mixing, Soul Master C and Kling could mix. But Hamish started scratching, and he was good. And it was like, what? That's that scratching shit. So a couple of months, because I was DJing, and it hadn't even really clicked that there was this whole scratch aspect to it. And then I saw this dude Hamish scratching, and then no shit, the week later he was at the Club Leander, and he was scratching again. So I was like, how do you do that? And anyway, I ended up dancing for Hamish. And then he ended up taking me under his wing and teaching me about DJing and where he came from, which was more of a true school hip hop style. Kling was actually a house DJ who was playing hip hop the day I saw him, but he was a house DJ. But Kling was the man, because we stayed friends for years, and he used to live with Hamish, so it was just really dope. And they, in fact, I was the only one with turntables, and I would ask. Oh no, wait. Kling had turntables and lent them to me 2 weeks after I met him. He lent me his entire setup so I could go DJ in my school after sixth form after party. I was in fifth form, but I DJed the school sixth form after party at the Chinese Horticultural Hall near Hagley High School for Linwood College in 1991. And that's how my DJ career started, really. From there on, like I said, I met Kling. I kind of dabbled in mixing for 2 or 3 years, and Hamish would scratch, and I would dance for Hamish, and I didn't really take the DJing thing super duper serious. In fact, I lent my turntables to Hamish so he could get better, so then he could teach me, which he did, and he would give me full access to his house, which was dope, because he got me into festival films and real coffee and Vogel's bread and like celery, or no, not celery, bean sprouts and stuff, like just kind of like, and books, like he got me into, and rap music, he got me into like hip hop. Hamish got me into everything. So massive shout outs to Kling and Hamish. And from there, I was pretty good. From 1994 on, after I hung out with Hamish, I kind of got better than him, really, as far as scratching that goes, around 95, 96. He was funkier, but I was funkier than him by around about 98, 99. Technically, I got quite good quite fast, around 94 to 95, 96. I just kind of flew past, like, because that's all I did. Hamish was more about the rap music and the making beats and the rapping, and I was like, just scratch, just scratch. Didn't even care about mixing. Stopped like wanting to be a club mixer, just wanted to be a DJ scratching in a band and a battle DJ. Saw Hamish showed me my first DMC video, which really made me want to get into like beat juggling and all that. And then in 1996, I went to Wellington and entered my first DJ battle, which then really woke me up to that I wasn't shit and that I really needed to learn how to beat juggle. And that art form had only just kind of come out. So from there on, yeah, I did that from like 1996. I battled to around 2003, and I'd got in a we and I also did a lot of club stuff, played a lot of I suppose I've got to do my radio. Should I do my radio background? Yeah, so okay, so 14 minutes. Okay, so I did I the scratch wise, That's how I learned to scratch, and my first battle was in Wellington. Then I entered battles in Christchurch every year after that, till 2003 when I finally won one, which was a 2003 South Island ITF. And but also I did radio, and radio started with Hamish and another dude called Antsman, Anton Carter, and they formed a group called Beats and Pieces, and Anton was like the organizer, and Hamish was like the creative. And I was just the scratch DJ kind of, and I came in later. Those two were, and they were like selector DJs, like DJs who were just like full on, didn't care 100% about the mixing and technical like me, but they were just the best, the dopest selectors, and they just delivered this really dope show, really good content, really good voice breaks, really good freestyling for like 2 years from 1994 to 1996, just solid every Monday night, just fucking freestyles. Like you could ring in and drop a topic, and Hamish is just the most insane freestyler. It really was just like a breeding ground for like crush hip hop as well. Like we know that like Lady Six and Scribe used to listen, and you know. And aim to be better than us, and eventually would, but we kind of, you know, at least sparked like a lot of like people to get into like the whole kind of free form style of hip hop, I guess. So we did that, and then me and Hamish left in '96 and went to Wellington. I came back in '98, and Beats and Pieces was still going with Antsman, and he'd extended the crew to a whole bunch of people. So we just fit back straight in there and kept doing it. And then Anton left, and me and another dude, DJ Ali, had really kind of, I wouldn't say got sick of the freeform style, but it had gotten quite loose when Anton left for a while, and Antsman left, and we kind of just like couldn't depend on people to come every single week, but people would come kind of regularly once a month, but we needed like a more core kind of crew that would turn up a bit more regular, and would also kind of cull some of the kind of half-assed kind of the people who weren't putting enough effort into it and weren't turning up enough. So we culled the group down to myself, DJ Danger, Scribe, and the Charmed One. And DJ Ali, this is mainly through me and DJ Ali, and then we dropped the name Beats and Pieces and changed it to Main Source, and here we did that until 2000, and then we took Main Source to Tahu FM, and then I stopped doing radio DJing around 2003. And 2002, kind of 2002, 2003, and then I kind of got burnt out with the whole DJing thing. So I'd finished, I'd won a battle, I was doing event, I was started getting into event management. I went into Polytech and studied, and I kind of was like these gigs that I was never a residential DJ. Never will be, and never wanted to be a residential DJ. Meaning, playing Thursday to Saturday at the same place 6 hours a night. For like $500. I was more like, be in high demand, do one gig a week for $100, kind of like $100 an hour instead of like, you know, $50 an hour and getting more gigs. I just didn't like DJing for that long and listening to music for that long, that loud anyway. So it was good. And I was more like hip hop, not cheesy music. But anyway, I got kind of burnt out, and, but I was in a good space, like creatively. Like I just won a battle, and I was kind of like feeling that vibe. So I was just keen to just and turntablism in general was slowly declining. It had peaked. It had kind of hip hop really peaked around 2003 in New Zealand, and then started dying down commercially as far as how much you could make money being a scratch DJ or a rapper, as opposed to like 2001 where we were making so much more money. And getting so many more gigs, and it was just a lot more respected. But you know, things go up and down, and so it went down. And then me and a few friends, DJ friends and rapper friends, got invited to Whitebait TV to talk about a Māori hip hop show and some of the content and give advice and kind of like a consultation, yeah, kind of like as a like just to consult this production company on what they should do and include in their hip hop show. And we knew they also needed some presenters and a DJ. So I went along, and a few of my friends went along, and I gave my input. I was very vocal about what I think they should do, and then they asked me if I would be the DJ, and I just said yep straight away. So that was really, really, really cool, because straight away my job was to come up with three scratch breaks a week for like scratch outros to ad breaks. And so it was cool. There was no beat mixing. I was bored with all that shit, and I hated the clubs. So it's just these little creative things, like little DJ sets that you'd have to do at battles anyway. So you'd have to make them up every week before the show, do them all in a row live, and they'd just chop them up and put them in the show. It was recorded like it was live, but technically it was pre-recorded. It was like over a year pre-recorded. And then that was really dope, and I did that for about 6 months, and then Whitebait, I heard a rumor when I was dropping someone off at the airport, because I'd started getting into production, like helping out, like getting paid a bit extra to help run errands during the week. And especially on the day that we shot on a Tuesday. And one of the directors that I was taking to the airport said, "Be on your best behavior, because Whitebait's about to get the contract for What Now, the children's television show, and they're going to want a DJ, and they're thinking about you." And I was like, oh my God. So I knew for about 4 weeks, 3 or 4 weeks, that this could be a possibility. So, yep, I was a good boy anyway. So I just made sure I was extra good and didn't speed or do anything stupid in that time. And then, yeah, sure enough, 3 or 4 weeks later, they asked me if I wanted to be the DJ on What Now? And I was like, hell yeah. And so, yeah, so for them, for 4 years, I did a similar thing to Tūhono. I had to do three or four scratch breaks. They really turned into like scratch comedy and weird, weird experimental scratch things. But that was very interesting, and I got into more kind of production and like musical stings and musical scratch comedy production stings, weird kind of samples, trying to mix the theme of the show, like scratching the Harry Potter theme over some beats that I made out of the Harry Potter themes, like samples and stuff, and from the music, from the movies. So it was very creative and very cool, but also opened me up to my whole TV career, which is a different segment of my podcast. So I'm going to do a segment which is will probably start around, the What Now stuff and the Tūhono stuff for Māori TV. And then after I did that, I changed my name. I was DJ Pauls. I was Richie Broke for ages. I was DJ Pauls. And then I was DJ Vinyl Richie for What Now. And then after What Now, 2008, I was basically stopped DJing till about, I was just burnt out and over it, as far as like, it was not cool to be a scratch DJ. It was, I still loved scratching and beat juggling and that, but it wasn't only not cool, I was burnt out as a DJ. So I pretty much stopped from 2008, like till 2012, when I started back. I started DJing. I was just got the urge for it again, and I started. I'd always still loved it in the back of my head, and I'd been doing stuff in the music industry, but I hadn't been DJing per se. So then, 2012, I hit up Bass FM and asked them. Actually, I got a gig for Electric Wire Hustle through Native Style, Mata TK. Big shout out to Mata TK, who, because I got back into DJing again, I knew he was playing in town, And I just emailed him and said, look, I see you're doing a gig. Can I be a support DJ? It was in my head. I was just trying to relaunch my DJ career. And it was amazing because Dylan C from Bass FM was there playing before or after me. And I killed it. And I played like some badass songs he hadn't heard. And he said something and I said, oh, I sent you a demo. I want a show. And yeah, he gave me a show 2 weeks later. So, and then I started DJing again. And then from there, I met Scissor Hands, DJ Scissor Hands. And then we kind of started pushing each other each week to like get better. And then we started getting into scratch. I started like loving scratching again because he was already always into it. He's a lot younger, so he got into it a lot later. So he didn't get burnt out like me. And I reestablished my love for it. And I started learning some new scratches, some new juggles. I think I'm a lot cleaner. I got better at using, found my love for mixing again and selecting and really working hard at just a free radio show that, and there's some good shows out there online. Links, I'll try and link this blog to some of those radio shows because they really are really good. But yeah, so at the moment I'm at a stage where I have no gear. But I really want some because I really want to teach my son who's 9, and I really love it too. Like I really want to learn the Autobahn and all the new scratches and all the swing flares and everything. It's just I've just been in a really good place with it. So there it is, my DJ story. I guess the highlights were some things I guess I didn't say. 1997, I was the first DJ to DJ in the Beehive. The What Now thing was amazing. I can't front on that. That's just professionalism wise, just experience wise, just kind of creative wise. It was just pushed me in a lot of ways to really not only become more confident in that realm as far as speaking, public speaking, blogging, vlogging, all of this stuff, but also just kind of like opening my eyes up to who I am and what I'm capable of, and my awareness of myself in a weird way, like being on TV and being able to actually look at yourself. Like, when they say you'll take a good look at yourself, it's like, well, when you're on TV, you can just look at yourself. So it's kind of like, yeah, it's weird. I'll get into that in some deeper shit, but that's my DJ story. Still love it. Still gonna, you can still expect more from me. Especially in the realm of videos and teaching. I've always wanted to do an online teaching course, so that's definitely something I could very easily do being a filmmaker and a good DJ who, not just good, I'm good at, I think I'm good at teaching. Like I've taught a lot of people how to DJ and I think I've got a good mind for breaking down anything. So you can expect that. That's my DJ story. I hope you enjoyed that. Have a great day. You can send me any messages you want about what you want me to talk about. If you know me, you know me, then you know I've got like I said in the previous couple of posts segments, I'm just testing the water. I'm just trying to get better at speaking, be more concise, stop babbling and rambling and just getting to the point. And I think I'm doing all right. So we're gonna get into some deeper stuff soon. But I hope you enjoyed that. All right, peace.